Good evening, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, sitting here with
Garland Nixon.
And hopefully, although I know he's stuck in the snow, we will eventually get here either in studio or on a cell phone while driving in the snow. We won't tell the cops about that. We're going to get Terry DeKester hopefully with us very shortly. I do want to thank everyone who came out last week to see us live at Ben's Next Door, next door to Ben's Chili Bowl. We had quite a nice crowd. They were almost as raucous as the Raucous Caucus. And we appreciate you doing that. We're going to start tradition, and I think you're going to be able to see us virtually every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Not tonight. Tonight there was this thing called a blizzard that some of you may be aware of. I'm not so sure.
I think Terry's pretty familiar with it right now, wherever he is.
I'm afraid Terry is slip-sliding away right now, probably listening to us on the radio and laughing and hopefully not hitting the car next to him. But with the exception of tonight, we hope to be many a Tuesday at Ben's Next Door, and you can see us live. Sometimes it's nice just to put a face with a voice.
And come on out, and don't forget, we take live audience questions.
Absolutely.
So you can be a part of the Raucous Caucus, and you can throw in a few jokes and, you know, kind of have a good time with us.
You can challenge us to our face, which we always welcome, and you know, we can't hide from you there. I mean, you know.
And it's right there at Ben's Next Door, which is over on U Street. Everyone knows where Ben's Chili Bowl is, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. The owners of Ben's Chili Bowl have opened a place called Ben's Next Door, and we have a lot of fun there. Great place, TVs, and what do they have, the half smokes and just to flow in and all the good stuff.
I had the crab cakes, actually, this time. But anyway, so it's every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Next week, barring another blizzard. I mean, unless we have Snowpocalypse 4, which, you know, right now it's Snowpocalypse 3. It just seems like the first two movies. You know, it doesn't seem like it's that new to have a three-peat.
It looks like this. I think we're down to it. We've got a little system. We have on Fridays and Tuesdays is when we have our snowstorm.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So you have a hotline to God. I did not know that you and the Almighty were that close.
No, I'm just watching a pattern.
Every week,
Friday and Tuesday,
all right.
Week after week, we have a snowstorm.
Fair enough. But barring a snowstorm,
progressively worse, I might add.
We will be there next Tuesday and hopefully every Tuesday thereafter for the near future. Now, before we get into our topic tonight, which is Sarah Palin and the Tea Party activists and why I think they are not just a joke, but we actually should fear them, I do have to give one shout out real quick to the New Orleans Saints, because it may surprise you. I see T clapping in the background.
I am
a proud member of Who Dat Nation. I have been a proud member of Who Dat Nation, I got to tell you, all season long. And not just because my grandfather's from New Orleans and I got lots of friends from there, but I got to say, for me, just seeing the resurgence of New Orleans after the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, I think all of America really, with the possible exception of the suburbs of Indianapolis,
right.
really we're pulling for the Saints, not just for a great team and great heart, but really for a great city.
It's just such a great story because the team has been so bad for so long.
Right. I mean, 42 years.
It was just horrible team, bags over their heads, the whole nine yards. And what's interesting is Peyton Manning's father, Archie Manning, was a quarterback for the New Orleans Saints.
Right.
And he was a great quarterback on a horrific team. So
right.
How interesting that the Saints should come back and get theirs against their
42
their...
years, first time in the Super Bowl. And I just got to say, if I couldn't be here enjoying the snowpocalypse, I might want to be down there for more.
And you couldn't find someone who you have to like more than Drew Brees.
That's true. He's just a class act.
Yeah,
there's just nothing. All right. Okay. Enough with that. You've heard all the Super Bowl stuff. Let's get down to brass tacks, because I got to tell you, it's easy to make fun of Sarah Palin.
You're right about that, and I intend to tonight, I might add.
And you have every right to, and you should. You may not be quite as good as Tina Fey at it, Garland.
Right.
No one really is. But it's easy to make fun of her. I mean, here she was in Nashville, Tennessee, my hometown, making fun of Barack Obama for doing what every politician does, use a teleprompter. And yet she had crib notes in her hand. I don't know if you saw the
literally
clip.
In her hand.
No, she wrote on her hand. It said
right.
Budget cuts, and she scratched out budget and put tax cuts. I guess she liked the soundbite of tax cuts.
She was
cuts
probably
better.
Confused, actually. She wrote budget cuts, and her handler said, that's supposed to be tax
that's
cuts.
That's right. she literally crossed out on her
and
hand.
And then they had to explain to her the difference.
And then, of course, she had raise America's spirit and energy.
Oh,
so that's her whole platform in four words on her hand. It's easy to make fun of her. She also, by the way, said, I did this, fellow listeners, so that you don't have to. I suffered through all 58 minutes of that speech and question and answer. And I want you to know I did my duty, my patriotic duty for my country. I listened so you don't have to.
Just listening to that speech is going to cost you about 10 points off your IQ.
Well, it
dumbs you down.
I was near a toilet, so it was okay. But she talked about Alaska as a beacon of hope. I think she meant America there.
Alaska's a beacon of hope.
Okay. Yeah, to those who swim across the Bering Strait, right. I suppose. But let's be clear here. When they say Palin 2012, this is what the Tea Party guy said. That does scare liberals. And I got to tell you, I think we should be scared. She's got her folksiness. She is simplistic. In my mind, you know what she really is, Garland? She's George W. Bush all over again.
Here's what she is. Yeah, you got to explain this to me.
Let me give you my argument, and you can respond. Okay. Tell me if you disagree. All right. She's got the intellect of George W. Bush. It's hard to compare low levels of IQ.
How about we go with this? She has the intellect of a Bush.
Okay. Well, no. She's
lilac rose.
But she's also got, as far as I'm concerned, the anti-intellectualism.
Yes.
Of W. Bush. The idea that all those elite college-educated people are bad and shouldn't be trusted. Don't trust
scientists. Polysyllabic words.
That's right. All that awful stuff. And the idea is that with George W. Bush he was fun to have a drink with, right? Even though he was supposedly a teetotaler. The idea was, he's stupid and yeah, he's kind of simplistic, but we want to have a drink with him. Well, she is playing that every man, every woman image down to an art form, right? I mean, you know, they get a pretty woman and she's folksy and she uses cliches. And she's all about sound bites. I mean, her perhaps her most famous one was, how's that hopey changey stuff treating you? As if hope and change are bad things that I guess she opposes. But I think we need to be fearful of charismatic people. And I think she's got a charisma. I mean, you may disagree with me, Garland. I think she's got a folksy charisma, a dangerous
Jerry Lewis
charisma.
Had a charisma in character. one of those types.
And yet she's good at spouting sound bites, very, very dangerous sound bites. And when she's joining with the Tea Party people, which remind me of no one other than the angry supporters of Ross Perot some 16, 18 years ago. They don't really know what they stand for, but they're angry, right. And they're mad at the government, and they want to throw the bums out. So is Terry on the line yet? Because I've heard that.
Speaking of bums.
No, someone who's angry and wants to throw the bums out.
I was about to say.
I mean, if Terry weren't on our side of the aisle, he's going to hate me for this. I could see him as part of the
Tea Party. Yeah.
Because I think they are focused on a legitimate anger in
but
this
I
country.
Think on Terry's side of the aisle, it'd be like the carrot juice party the wheatgrass juice party.
The wheatgrass.
Something more healthy, a lot more healthy.
The point is that these people are dangerous. And they actually, you were telling me, Garland, how they remind you of many other movements in America.
Yeah, well, you know, if you look historically speaking, these, and I think what happens throughout America, a lot of people change, but movements are the same. If you know much about Prohibition, the way it came, and the people that brought us Prohibition, they were very nativist. And what you have here is this, and this is the argument I make about the problem that with Palin's so-called movement, is it's a very nativist, and I hate to, with an apology to Native Americans, okay, they consider it as a nativist.
Well, tell me what nativist means.
Nativist people who are feel that they're the real natives of this country and everyone else shouldn't be here. Their people
they tend to be white people.
Mayflower.
Let's be very clear what we're talking about here. They're not the Native Americans.
What you've got is this.
They tend to be
rural, right. White, and Protestant.
That's right.
Before the
and often descendants of the early English settlers.
Yes, and what you had basically, and what you have again is this. And if you notice, she'll say, "I'm in real America," and she always says that when she's out in the rural areas. Before Prohibition, you had the rural Protestant, very religious people, and they viewed the urban as the evil. You had all these ethnic Jews and Italians and Irish and blacks
Greek
and all these people
right.
who were doing terrible things,
right.
And it was anti-urbanist, and it was very
anti-intellectual.
Anti-intellectual, anti-urbanist. It was, hey, you got to go by the Bible, and you got to go by what we say goes in the Bible, and that should be the law of the land. And what you see here is this. A lot of people look at it and say, my gosh, how could they go for Palin? She's, let's just say, not real bright. With this particular group, they have no concern whatsoever for competency. They want a leader who agrees with their morals and with their moral and ethical feelings, beliefs, and values. Competency is irrelevant to them. So no matter
how
stupid she appears to them, that's not relevant. What they want is they want someone who's going to get in office and enact the moral policies that they want enacted, they could give a crap about everything else.
I'm going to partly agree with you and partly disagree.
Okay.
I'm going to agree with you that they don't care about competence, they don't care about intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I compared it to George W. Bush.
Precisely.
Because he's not very competent and not very intelligent. So clearly that's okay with
mm-hmm.
them. But when you say they want someone who supports their values, I'm not so clear what their values are. I want to get into that, into this hour, what they say their values are
right.
and how they actually don't make sense. Because in my mind, they remind me more of a party that existed in the about 1850s
mm-hmm.
called the Know-Nothing Party.
Mm-hmm.
K-N-O-W, N-O-T-H-I-N-G, no, like they knew nothing.
Yep.
And they were proud of the fact that they knew nothing. And they ran candidates, including a former president, Millard Fillmore, on
yep.
the round of, hey, we know nothing. Knowledge is bad.
Yep.
And to me, that's really who they are, because when you get down to brass tacks, they don't agree on much. You remember back in the, after Ross Perot ran a very successful third-party campaign.
Mm-hmm.
He got 14% in 92, mm-hmm. some 7% in 96. That the Reform Party was trying to move on past Ross Perot.
Mm-hmm.
And it descended into a convoluted battle of basically everyone trying to take charge, but no one agreeing on anything the movement standed for. They seem to be libertarian. But then you get down to real libertarian issues, things like, oh, decriminalizing drug laws, that would be something
mm-hmm.
a libertarian would want, or allowing a woman freedom of choice to do what she wants with her own body, that would seem to be a libertarian thing, allowing gay people to get married, that would seem to be libertarian, and you found out, well, they weren't quite libertarian, they didn't want to allow women or gay people or people who wanted to, you know, use drugs without harming anybody, basic liberties. No, it wasn't about that. It tended to be about no government spending, fiscal conservatism.
Well, and from what that perspective, when you talk about some of those things they were against, and I get back to this, it was a very kind of, quote, religious, what they would argue were moral based. So what they want is someone who will enforce what they believe is religiously and morally right. The rest of, in my opinion, a lot of the rest of that debt and all that crap is window dressing. Ultimately, they want someone who's going to get in there and pass what they believe. They're kind of like a
Do you think they're closet religious fundamentalists? You
yes,
think they're closet
yes, yes.
theocrats?
Yes, yes, yes. And they in a lot of ways they use politics, because if you watch them, okay, here's a prime example. When George Bush was in, when the Republicans were in power and the debt was being run up, they could care less about the
that's
debt.
That's true.
Who cares about the debt? That big deal.
Right,
now,
right.
The day,
don't tax me to pay for this war.
Right. The day that the Democrats take power, now all of a sudden they're against the debt, which tells you that the debt is not really a relevant point. You cannot switch a 180-degree position on anything if it's really relevant to your platform. So then you have to ask yourself, it's not about money, nah, because they don't care about the debt as long as their guy's in. It's not about anything except what they're consistent with. What have they been consistent with? Anti-abortion, anti-gay, I would say anti-immigrant, but they actually anti-anybody who's either religiously or ethnically different than they are.
Well, it's interesting. Tom Tancredo spoke at their convention. Now, Tom Tancredo is someone who has one issue and one issue only. I think he's former. I don't think he's still currently a congressman from Colorado.
No, he's not. Thank God.
Former congressman, and he was Lou Dobbs on steroids, as it were. He was anti-Mexican and anti-any immigrant.
You're right.
Tom Tancredo gave a speech at that convention in which he said that the people elected Obama could not spell the word vote. Now, what do you think that means?
Well,
one, it's an attack on Americans that are foreign-born, sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, I think, an implicit attack on I think there's a perception among people like Tom Tancredo that poor people are less educated. It sounded to me like he wants to bring back all those good old Jim Crow literacy tests.
Absolutely.
In order to let people to vote. He's saying,
it's a code. It's, you know what? It's like code words. That,
yeah.
that the Republicans say welfare, you know, they mean black people. You know, certain things they
right.
when he says, oh, they're stupid. Well, let's see. Who do we apply those types of stereotypes to? I don't have to say it. The Tea Party movement already knows who I – it's my way of saying what I need to say without saying it.
So, but here's what I find interesting. I mean, they are – some of them are closet theocrats, people who are religious fundamentalists.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, I think, truly are people who care about the debt and were mad at the Republicans during that era. It's a motley crew. I mean, I don't
think there's many in there.
The thing is that you can't say they have a certain – platform because they disagree. In fact, they're having massive fights among themselves. The Tennessee Tea Party doesn't agree with the National Tea Party, and many of them don't agree with the fact that this is a for-profit movement.
Right.
At the convention,
right.
They charge
$550
to attend the convention, $350 to get the dinner with Sarah Palin, which reportedly had lobster in it, which doesn't really sound like a populist people's movement. I mean, I like lobster, but it doesn't...
They're down south. Shouldn't they be eating, like, corn fritters and greens
fried
and potato
chicken.
Salad or
I mean,
something?
That's Nashville, Tennessee. That seems to be what you'd eat there. So,
what was this about carrots?
look who joined us.
We've got
here.
The wheatgrass candidate here.
You guys didn't start without me, did you?
No. Are you kidding?
Well, you know, it came 7 and we didn't hear from you, so...
Hey, Mark, you mean Terry's not here? I hadn't noticed.
Oh, Terry, you're not there. Well, no wonder we were having such a great conversation,
yeah,
right.
Darling. Yeah, I'm over at Ben's next door. I don't know where you guys are, but I'm great...
That's next week, Terry. That's next week. Well, Terry, I got to ask you, obviously, since you've joined us, what you think about Sarah Palin and the Tea Party movement.
Well, I've been listening to you guys, and, you know, I'll tell you, you know, trying to figure out what their appeal is, and, you know, you've sort of touched on it, and the appeal, which I do agree is very dangerous, is that she plays to the mythology about America.
Mm-hmm.
And that reaches across all kinds of political lines. I mean, even, you know, educated... relatively educated, shall we say, you know, Democrats, Republicans, libertarians, whatever, you know, still believe that this is sort of a promised land, even if they don't say it. They believe the Constitution is all about, you know, making sure that they can be an individual and have the right to drive their car at any speed limit they want.
You know? Right.
But they really do believe in the mythology and of the founding of America and all of that and the American dream and everything else, which we've talked about, and she plays to that. And it is enormously powerful. And it's, I agree, it's very scary because I think, you know, the one other thing, you know, the reason that I have always pushed such an, you know, shall we say, revolutionary thing is because I do see this right rising, this right side rising. Well, and if we don't get out and fight it in every way we can, it's very dangerous.
Well, you know, Terry, I tend to think, and I understand what you, I understand the perspective that sees this, or this group as a threat. I understand that perspective, and I see it, but I don't necessarily agree, because I tend to feel that at this point in America, that, number one, Sarah Palin is so far out there that it's... I just don't see people in the center, or getting anything in the center. I don't see any following in the center for her, regardless of what she's doing, because she's such a
right-wing extremist.
And not to mention she's an absurd caricature of a Republican.
She's a caricature of herself.
You're right. But I just don't see this party as a legitimate threat to anything much other than the Republican Party. The only thing that scares me about them is this is the type of, this is the group that cultivates Timothy McVeighs and these other nutcases that would be prone to violence. That's the only thing that really scares me about the Tea Party.
Gar, let me suggest to you that I think we should be more scared. And let me tell you why.
More scared?
Yeah.
You turned into a Republican army.
No. Let me tell you why.
I'm just joking.
I think the Tea Party's ideas, and I'm going to get to them, they're completely...
They have ideas?
Well, they claim to. I actually listened, like I said, to the old Sarah Palin speech, and I'm going to talk about how her ideas absolutely contradict each other. They're fascinating because they're so completely incoherent. But the anger that fuels the Tea Party is real. And I don't think we can discount that. People are angry. We have high unemployment. Sarah Palin mentioned that. That's right. We do have high unemployment. Obama mentions it all the time. Democrats mention it all the time.
Her party created it. But
her party created it.
You
know. Exactly. Her party created this crisis. And now she says, there's a crisis out there. Look at what we did. I mean, look at what Obama did, she says, to the Bush Depression. But the anger is real. And I think that Sarah Palin, with her folksy simplicity and her sound bites, is channeling real American anger by people who really aren't Democrats or Republicans. People, you could call them independents, but they're kind of against all parties. They're against really sort of any kind
of
political
like
system. Well, that's why I mentioned Terry. You won't follow Sarah Palin. I know you won't. But my point is there's a real anger out there against Washington and the way Washington does things. And some of it's absolutely legitimate. Some of it is why President Obama is President Obama. She's trying to channel that same anger into her presidential candidacy in 2012, and you know, I think we have to be careful lest she succeed.
Terry,
there's also you got to throw in. I mean, you know, if she were just by herself, and we're not for independent other candidates. I mean, there's also Ryan Paul, you know, who's getting considerable publicity. And he's another problem. I wouldn't be at all surprised if you will see a lot of Republican candidates during this coming election certainly playing to the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
They will pretend to be a little bit more moderate, but they will play to it. And also, she plays into the military-industrial congressional complex. She plays into what the banks essentially want. You know, whether she's bright enough to understand from the whole issue, but she plays into it. She plays into what insurance companies want. There's this whole structure that she serves with her simplicity, and it's not just that she's a threat or that she and the Tea Party are a threat, but this whole mass movement that does dominate a large part of the American economy and the American intellectual thought, as weak as it may be.
Well, in essence, what it is, it's populism. It's appealing to the populist masses. It's demagoguery. Mm-hmm. And she's very smartly trying to attack both parties at the same time as she promotes Republican candidates. And I think what she's trying to do, she's trying to tap into this anger of Americans that just want to say, F you, I can't say the F word, but F you to all American political parties,
right,
and trying to tap into it for her own use, trying to claim this is a popular movement at the same time as she's getting $100,000 for her speech there. So my question to both of you gentlemen, to you, Garland and Terry, well, gentlemen or not, my question to you both is this an independent movement a la Perot, or is this a Republican movement masquerading as an independent movement?
Okay, I'll start. I think it's an independent.
Who said you could start?
Go
ahead, Donna.
Okay. I think it's a fairly independent movement. Yes, it is made up of far right, religious fundamentalism to a certain extent. It's made up of the ruralists, the nativists. I think that it is a kind of a fringe party. I think the biggest threat politically that the Tea Party movement represents is to the Republican Party. We can see what happened in upstate New York.
Really?
So
you think they'll split the vote a la Buchanan?
Yes. I think the Republican Party is scared to death that she will, coming in 2012, and yank the party so far to the right that she'll come in and that her followers will flock to the voting booth, and that in the primaries, far, far right wing, unelectable, wacko candidates
will beat normal Republicans.
Right, and that she'll in fact, I don't remember who it was, and this is the last thing I'll say, and defer to Terry. I believe it was Senator McCain's head guy during his campaign,
Steve Schmidt.
But one of them said it would be catastrophic if Sarah Palin. It would be catastrophic for the Republican Party if Sarah Palin became the nominee in 2012.
Yeah, I think that was Steve Schmidt, and I have
and
to
it
say
for the reasons that
for,
I said
for that reason,
and he knows
I do support
stuff.
Her as nominee
yeah, you're
for
right.
2012.
Palin 2012.
But I am worried about the movement. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, I don't. I think she is much more. We make a big mistake if we underestimate her, and I don't think it's a threat just because of her, and I think that's really important. She is simply a voice at the moment. She is not the Tea Party, and the Tea Party doesn't consider her their voice. She is just a voice. If you look at history in any nation that has swung to the right, it's not because every candidate gets into the office is a right case nut job, to quote my good friend Garland.
Yes.
You know, they are simply people who follow a political trend that moves further and further to the right, and therefore creating a much more dangerous society. Nazi Germany did not come in with a whole lot of nutcases in the German parliament. Mussolini or anybody else, it never comes in as, oh, here's a whole group of right-wing nut jobs who are going to take over Congress. It's not that way. What happens is they gain enough power, they have enough public support, that every moderate Republican starts to play to them and lean towards them and allow them for their own safety. And in that way, the whole government and the whole society shifts further and further to fascism.
I think that's the real threat. No, I think you're dead on. It's interesting that Sarah Palin said several times this is not top down. There's no one leader. There's no cult of personality, said the woman who's becoming a cult of personality.
Right, right, right.
There's no central authority. And indeed, they are fighting amongst themselves. The Tennessee Tea Party disagreed with the National Tea Party. This basically came with the invitation of a guy named Judson Phillips, who's most famous for refusing to pay his income taxes and getting in trouble for it. This isn't like Timothy Geithner, who made a mistake over some complex stuff. This is a guy who just didn't pay his income taxes. So what you have here is really an anarchic movement, and a movement that says no taxes, no government, no authority. And that way, Terry mentioned fascism. You, Garland, you mentioned Timothy McVeigh. I think when I think of Timothy McVeigh and I think of that kind of militia group and give us our guns and anti-government, it's the Black Hawk crowd, really, that they're playing to.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, and consider the money that will show up behind her. I mean, it is huge, or behind the movement. Well, it is not a neutral situation. And we live in a time that's requiring this nation to make extraordinary choices. And one of the things we're doing is avoiding the choices like crazy because of all the reasons that we've discussed before. But either way, these choices have to be made, and it's either going to be towards a progressive society or it's going to be towards a more totalitarian right-wing society. And I think that we're at that crossroads. And it's going to go one way or the other in a relatively short time.
Well, I tend to think that I'm not as worried, and here's a reason, one of the big reasons I'm not as worried. The demographics are changing. The demographics have changed drastically between 1980 when a Ronald Reagan won and between when a Barack Obama won. So I think that what that ruralist type movement, that old school kind of know-nothing party movement, the demographics are such in our country now that it's going to be difficult because that movement offends a whole hell of a lot of people. And if you look at the Tea Party, you'll notice one thing about it, all of the Tea Parties. There is no one there darker than George W., you know, darker than Palin.
See, but Garland, I hope you're right, but I fear you're wrong. Look, following up on what Terry said, I always look at history.
Let's give out the number before the break,
I promise. But if you look at history here, if you look back to the Great Depression, and you look back to where America was in the early 1930s, we had the greatest economic collapse in America's history. This one is not as bad as that one, but it's the worst since that time. And there was a real question, would America turn to progressives like Franklin Delano Roosevelt? Mm-hmm. Or you had right-wing, yes, fascist people like Father Coughlin on the radio, preaching nativism, preaching exactly the same kind of thing that the Tea Party preaches light, as it were.
Right.
And there was that choice, and when you have economic misery, when you have people who are just in terrible shape, they don't have a job, they've lost their home, it's being foreclosed upon, they can't afford health care, you know, their parents, elderly parents are dying, their children, whatever it is, they are seeking radical solutions, and it tends to divide the country either in a more progressive direction or a more, dare we say, right-wing, even fascist direction. That's what happened in the 30s, that's what economic times do, and I got to say, you're right, Garland, that there's no one blacker than the darker than George W. Bush in the movement now. But the Republican Party is getting smart. They're using Michael Steele as a token. Clarence Thomas as a token.
Not gonna do them any good.
You don't fear that? I mean, look, they got the Vietnamese guy down in Louisiana. They got the governor of Louisiana who is Indian American. You don't think that this can break out of an all white movement and just be a populist pro corporate movement?
Let me just say this. If you're thinking that African Americans are going to get in the Republican Party, you can forget it. But go ahead, Terry.
Thank you. What they're preaching to is what Reagan preached to, you know, rightly or wrongly, you can disagree or offer. Well, what they're preaching to is what people want to believe America is or could be. That's what they want to believe. They wanted to believe that even in terms of Obama when he came into office. They wanted to believe that they've seen what they thought they were investing in terms of change hasn't happened and isn't going to happen. Or even if it does happen, it's not going to have a very long track record to prove itself. We don't have the patience or attention span that we had in the 30s or at any other era, frankly.
Well, Terry, I hate to break your way, but I think we've got to go to T's about to come through the window on us here. I think we're going to have to go to a PSA.
We can go to break.
Or get pummeled mercilessly by T.
And I also obviously want to invite our listeners to join in the discussion. 202-588-0839.
No. 202-588-0893.
Yes, oh, my God. I can't believe I said
202-588-0839. 800-259-0893.
Join us. Let us know what you think about Sarah Palin and the Tea Party movement. We'll be right back after this.
Hello, I'm Renee Bowser. Please be advised that the monthly local station board meeting scheduled for February 10th has been postponed due to inclement weather. The LSB meeting has been rescheduled and will be held on Wednesday, February 24th at 6:30 p.m. Please stay tuned to learn the meeting location. Thank you.
Okay, we're back. Garland and Askia Muhammad are telling me I should have written the phone number on my palm the way Sarah Palin does.
That's right, buddy.
202-588-0893. I do know the number. This is 89.3 FM. It's a little confusing because we got pledge line numbers in here. We've got some callers on the line. Caller, go ahead.
Is it me?
It is you.
It's you.
What's your name? Go ahead.
Okay. Incidentally, I have a book right in front of me, and the title of the book is Lost White Tribes, The End of Privilege and the Last Colonials in Sri Lanka, Jamaica, Brazil, Haiti, Namibia, and Guadalupe. And the author is Ricardo Orizio.
What's your point about the book?
Okay. I will tell you why I mentioned this book. Pat Buchanan has another book about foreigners taking over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say is, Sarah, it's not only Sarah Palin. There are other people.
I agree with you. I actually think that she is the necessary follow-up to Pat Buchanan.
All of that
movement, which has always been there under the surface, in many ways, by the way, was against the neoconservatives. This is what they used to call the paleoconservatives,
right.
The old-time Republican, nativist, anti-immigrant, anti-African-American, rural, pro-white, fundamentalist Christian Party. The caller is absolutely right. This is broader than Sarah Palin, and she in many ways is globbing herself onto an already existing movement.
Right, this is a movement that is not new.
No, it's not new. And one of the things, if you want to make yourselves, you know, familiar with what can happen here, pick up, you know, everybody's heard, I hope, of the famous author Jack London and all the wonderful books he wrote. But the very last book he wrote, if you haven't read it, is called The Iron Heel, and it is about the rise of fascism in America, and it's astounding because it's Jack London that wrote it. It's also really a quite good book, and it's very frightening. The Iron Heel by Jack London. This is not new.
Thank you, Carl. Let's go on to Jim. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you guys tonight?
We're good.
Great topic. So,
thank you.
Are you guys familiar with Smedley Butler?
I'm not. Tell us.
The name sounds like a member of the Tea Party.
Smedley Butler was the most decorated Marine at his time after, like, World War One, and there was a plot, a right-wing fascist plot by people like J.P. Morgan and others to overthrow FDR and install Smedley Butler as a fascist dictator.
I'm familiar with that plot.
He turned him in.
Interesting.
Nothing happened, of course, to the ruling class. Because it never does.
And that's the other thing, is that if you look at the ideas, and I do want to get a little bit into the so-called ideas of these people, because they're completely contradictory, but the one thing that's absolutely clear is they want to leave the corporations alone. This is supposed to be a grassroots movement. This is supposed to be a bottom-up movement. And they want no government regulation. They want a weak, powerless government. They want oil companies and pharmaceutical companies to be in control. They don't use those words. They say things like, oh, get rid of cap and trade. Well, what does that mean? That means we have more pollution and more power for oil companies. They say things like start health care over. What does that mean? That means more power for health insurance companies. They are a front for the business classes, and they always have been.
And as I said, this is the same people that brought you, the same group that brought you Prohibition. Even before Prohibition, that's what you had. You had this ruralist, nativist, fundamentalist group who aligned with the big corporations using the big corporations used the argument that, well, if people get drunk, then they'll cost us a lot of productivity on the job. So the same two groups came together for Prohibition, which was their biggest blunder and success all at the same time. So it's interesting that the dynamic that you see never changes.
And I think it's a mistake to refer to this current movement in any sense in a ruralist movement. I mean, it's not that. I mean, given the fact that something like 95% of the population, you know, lives in cities anyway.
It's not that high. It's not that high, Terry. It really isn't. There is still rural America out there. It's probably 25-30%.
But it's not a ruralist movement at all.
I think it is.
Well, I include suburban. I include suburban in that. I mean, you know, look, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. That's where it came from. And while Nashville is a solidly blue area of Tennessee, solidly Democratic, the counties around Nashville, the suburbs, are solidly Republican. So I think it's suburban and it's rural. One of the things that I do want to make clear, though, is that the policies are incoherent. Other than supporting corporate power, I was listening to Sarah Palin's speech, and one of the things she made a big deal of is that the federal government should respect the states, respect the 10th Amendment, allow the states to do what they want. There should be no strings attached, and she was very proud of the fact that she refused the stimulus money for Alaska.
Which was a lie.
It's actually overridden by her own Republican legislature. And she was proud of the fact that she talked about rejecting federal dollars, even though she, of course, accepted the Bridge to Nowhere earmark just a year earlier. But here's what's interesting. Even though she was complaining and saying the federal government should give no strings to states, then she talked about how states had chosen to use the stimulus package. And, of course, as you can always do when government money's handed out, she found a million here and a million there, that she didn't like the way state governors had chosen to use federal money. So she's arguing on the one hand, don't give strings to the states. And then she's arguing on the other hand, we need more strings for the states. And she doesn't seem to notice that she just contradicted herself.
And I always...
We can't use that. I mean, we can point it out. I understand. You know, but like to claim that, you know, like any fascist dictator, to claim that they're logical or reasonable is obviously not part of the equation. No, Hitler is not a rational, reasonable, logical man making logical proposals.
Well, they're also, of course, unreasonable in the same way that Ronald Reagan was about the deficit. They say they want less taxes for the rich, but they want less of a deficit because it's harming our children. And but they want to cut spending, but they won't name what spending they want to cut. And anytime you suggest cutting military spending, they go through the roof. So like most politicians, they say we're going to cut spending, but not name it. We're going to cut taxes, but not name it. And we're going to cut the deficit, all of which together, of course, is impossible.
I would argue that anytime you see inconsistent, incoherent policies, that means they're not real. All you're seeing is a front for the real hidden agenda. So when people change their policies overnight, well, we're against the, who cares, Dick Cheney, deficits don't matter when you guys get in power. Hey, wait a minute.
Right.
And not to mention this. In the 90s, they were totally anti-government. The government was your enemy.
That's right.
The instant George Bush became in charge.
They talked about the executive authority.
Right, and
you
are un-American. You are un-American if you don't go along with what Bush. So the reality is this. Anytime you see these inconsistencies, these drastic change and incoherent policies, it simply means this is all a front for a hidden agenda, so you got to figure out what the hidden agenda is. But I think we got some callers, don't we, Mark?
We do. RG's on the line.
RG.
Go ahead, RG.
Oh, my God. It's all right. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Talk to us, RG.
RG, you're a member of the family here. You're actually an unofficial member of the Ruckus Caucus.
Ben's last week just had a lot going on.
We'll see us next week. We'd like to meet you.
Hey, I already about been to your website, Mr. Levine. So
good.
You're the bomb. So,
well, call me Mark. I don't do any of those formal last names. Talk to us, RG.
And don't forget, RG, you're an unofficial member of the Raucous Caucus.
Because he's as raucous as we are.
I don't know if that's an insult.
I'm flattered and honored to be considered in that light. You guys have such good programs every week. You know, it's habit forming, you know.
Well, we want to be the good kind of habit. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on Sarah Palin and the Tea Party people?
Well, I think when we go back to the use of words, you know, I think at one point on the show when President Obama was campaigning, we talked about populism, particularly with Mark Levine and Garland. We both, and Garland first, actually, we had the word populism going with that. And now it's become a buzzword, you know. Everybody's talking about a populist agenda, populist platform, legislation based on populism. Now it's with the resurrection of the Republicans, now we see centrism being handed over very, very ever so slightly to head back to what might be considered conservatism. Mm-hmm. And where would that be? Left or right of what? I mean, we're dealing with linear reasoning here. And so as a result, I think that anytime the Supreme Court can use contrived precedent to get reverse a 100-year-old checks and balance a piece of legislation that has, you know, been the backbone of our three-tiered, or let's say, you know, the way that Everybody is supposed to control everybody else in the government.
Right, checks and balances.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, it's all theatrics of perceived demographic. I think it's where Sarah Palin comes in, you know. Talk about less government. Okay, it's less government until we talk about billions spent on a, you know, failed policy, failed war.
Right.
So, I mean, where does less and more government come in?
Well, and I think your point about theatricality is well taken. She's very good at theatrics. You know, I'm not against populism per se. I mean, policies have to be popular. We live in a democracy. You need to have popular support. What I call populism in a negative way is when you have these sound bites, these things like
right.
Sarah Palin says there's death panels in the health care bill, which is, of course, a complete lie, but uses that to sow doubts and therefore takes this popular idea, which is, well, the bill is 2,000 pages, therefore it's complicated, therefore it's bad. As if, you know, Social Security and Medicare
right, yeah.
weren't 2,000 pages long as well.
It's too long. Let's face it, it's too long for her to read.
Well,
it is. You know, and there's no pop-up pictures and no place to color with your crayon, so it's a little confusing.
So she uses sound bites in a populist way to actually take out policies that would be popular if they were understood and brought down to a simple level.
Let me ask you this, Terry. Terry, are you there, Terry?
Oh, you bet.
Now, here's one thing I got to throw up, and I'd like to hear your comment on it.
Okay.
We are talking about 2012 and what could happen and who could get elected and all these things that we surmise could happen, but we're talking about it under the old rules. There is a new set of rules that we don't know what might happen. We don't know how they'll affect the process now that the corporations can throw a smintillion, billion, hundred trillion, thousand million dollars into it. We may see where you know, the most Sarah Palin and every other Republican can get elected because Exxon throws a billion towards each of them. What do you think about that, Terry?
Well, this is why I think we have to take this so seriously. Is, you know, that is a huge factor, and it is going to, you know, money wins elections.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that simple. I mean, if you can throw out incumbents, which is almost impossible, but if you can, and even if you can't, you can influence incumbents. Are you guys there?
Oh yeah,
we're here.
Okay, I'm hearing a phone ringing on my phone. I don't know why. You know.
See, can you get rid of the phone ringing on Terry's line?
Yeah.
He's trying.
Oh, good. Hello?
I think that's your phone. Hey,
hello?
Hey, yeah, Terry, you know what? Maybe you should call back in. It sounds like your line's a little messed up there.
Hello?
No, Terry, I'm afraid your line's messed up. Call back in, and T'll get you in a minute. One of the things that I wanted to say is that when talking about Sarah Palin is that she very much is against any kind of complexity. Like not just a 2,000-page health bill. And one of the things she said in her speech is that we don't want talk, we want action. This from a woman who was governor of Alaska for 8 months, then she ran for vice president, then she went a few more months, and then she quit because she couldn't handle it because it was all too complex for her. And not only that, of course, she had a scandal in misusing her power in order to fire her brother-in-law and things like that. So this is a woman who claims that complexity is bad, and yet she can't run even the state of Alaska because of its complexity. So, you know.
Guys, I just want you to know that in this snow, I'm camped out on the 14th Street Bridge. I'm underneath the car in a sleeping bag.
You're underneath the car?
In a sleeping bag.
Underneath the car in the sleeping bag on the 14th Street Bridge. You know, I just want you to know. So please don't cut me off because it's getting a little chilly.
Well, I just want to make sure, Terry, that you don't have your dog with you because he's a very nice dog and I wouldn't want him out on a night like this.
Well, and actually, in the middle of losing you and regaining you, Terry, we lost a caller. So I want that caller to call back at 202-588-0893.
Do we have another caller?
202-588-0893. My only point about Palin.
But Garland, you know, you made a really big point here, and it's really important. This money and this election
mm-hmm.
is going to push it to the right.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question of that.
And we don't know how far.
Yeah,
you could get to
my concern, and I think we have to be careful. You know, we have to refute whatever policies they put out, but we do have to realize. You say hidden agenda, Garland. I don't think it's a hidden agenda at all. I think it's perfectly out there and open. You know, they are not going to win because of policy. They are going to win because of emotional appeal. And somehow we have to figure out a way to counteract that. And unfortunately, intellect doesn't necessarily counteract
emotional
appeal.
Well, unfortunately, it does not. Let's see if John has an answer. John, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Yes, I'm on the air.
You are on the air. Talk to us, John.
No, I have an idea. Why don't we hire the unemployed to help remove the snow? We got 12% unemployment in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we give them a box lunch, an 8-hour day, $10 an hour, a hat, a coat, shovels, a boot.
Sounds good to me. I fully support the idea, John. I think you should call Mayor Fenty and propose that idea to him.
Well, you can't call Marion Fenty because
Mayor
he's
Fenty.
Looking in the mirror.
I'll tell you what. Call your D.C. City Council. I happen to be a big fan of most members of D.C. City Council.
It's called the New Deal. Hire the unemployed at $10 an hour.
I agree with you. I support you, but it's off topic. So go ahead. Call your city councilman. I support it. Let's go on to the next caller. Who we got there? Jeremy.
Hello.
Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts on Sarah Palin and the Tea Party people?
Well, I have to say, this is the first time I'm ever hearing your show, and I'm loving what I'm hearing. So
thank you.
I hope I can be a regular listener.
Well, we're on every Tuesday at 7, and Jeremy, you can see us live at Ben's next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, every Tuesday except tonight, because there's a little bit of a blizzard outside.
Yeah, of course.
So I hope that you'll become a regular, and you can go to – we'll announce our websites at the end, and you can join our Facebook list and all that.
Okay.
Tell us your thoughts on Sarah Palin and the Tea Party folks.
Well, I have to say that I drove through that first Tea Party here in Washington. I'm a business owner and had to make it to work and drove through that thing. And the one thing that really struck me were all these signs that I saw everywhere. And these signs, it took me a bit of time to find out, but they are secessionist signs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. On flags, rather. I'm using the wrong word. Flags.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And really, I think that we have to call this whole movement for what it is, because movements are the sum of the people that believe in them. And, you know, Newt Gingrich said it best when, right after the speech that Obama gave in Egypt, where, he was commenting on the thing that Obama said about being a world citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And they really seized on, Newt Gingrich seized on this. And it was this thing of, I'm not a world citizen.
I'm an American.
Connected toward,
right.
Connected to people who are outside of being an American.
Right.
And so this whole thing of this Tea Party movement is a complete front for racism,
nativism, racism,
anti-immigrant.
It's a front.
Yep. I agree with you, Nate.
Me too.
And one of the things that's really interesting.
Well, let's let him finish.
Of everything that is not white, and it's not part of this, Norman Rockwell kind of, everybody,
mm-hmm.
There's no problems, there's no racism, there's no sexism.
Right.
Everybody's happy, and the people who are not happy are just,
commies. They're commies.
I think you're right, except I would add, Nick, that these people are unhappy. So it's kind of like an angry Norman Rockwell, as it were. It's like a Beaver Cleaver's dad out there with a pitchfork.
But that thing never existed to begin with.
Right.
It never existed to begin with. There's always been racism. There's always been sexism. And they've pretended as if they can relive something that never actually existed.
Well, it's interesting.
Well, this is what I mean by playing into the mythology, and this is exactly what they're doing, and that mythology is very strong and very popular.
And it's interesting how many times you've seen what happened to my country. I want my country back. And that's really saying that's where the race is coming out. Oh, no, the minorities and the ethnics and all the immigrants. Everybody is taking the country of me, the native, quote. And that just kills me, the native white person. But we have some calls, though.
We do. I just got to say, and I think Nick really hit the point on the head. One of the things that people have not focused on in the mainstream media, it's true and you can't deny it, have not focused on, is that Sarah Palin's husband, who according to all the Alaskan commissions plays a major role, and played a major role in her few months as governor, is not a Democrat, he's not a Republican, he's a member of the Alaskan Independence Party,
mm-hmm.
which advocates secession from the United States. It says Alaska first, America last. It says Alaska should never have been part of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frankly, unlike Rick Perry, who may or may not have been joking when he talked about Texas seceding, this is a serious
mm-hmm.
secessionist party, and so it's fascinating to me that this is the movement that Sarah Palin finds herself involved in, given that her husband is an avowed member of this secessionist
party.
Well,
and it also connects well, because when we hear the secessionist, It this connects with the Confederacy. This connects with works well with the remnants of the Confederacy, the deep Southern people who say, "Hey, you know, we never liked those Union people in the first place. We never liked those Northerners. Why'd you take our slavery away?" It really connects down south.
Before I get to the next caller, I want to throw out one more point here.
It connects to the West too. I mean, it really honestly does.
It's true. It's the old populist movement. Absolutely.
Yeah. If you've ever lived or worked in Texas, and unfortunately I've done both, you know, this is a common feeling in Texas that hey, we have the right to secede anytime we want. We have it written into our Constitution when we rejoined the Union, and you know they talk about it constantly in Texas at all levels of society.
I need to raise one more point, though, because there's only one point we haven't mentioned in the speech that we need to mention. It's the point that got the biggest applause line in the entire speech. It's when Sarah Palin said, "We need a commander-in-chief, not a professor of law at a lectern," she mm-hmm. said while standing at a lectern. She said, this is a direct quote, "There should be no constitutional rights to those that hate our Constitution." Sarah Palin is advocating lawlessness. She's saying we don't want to follow the law. The rule of law is bad. All these professors that follow all those niceties like the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and the laws should be thrown out the window. Get Pat Buchanan out with the pitchforks. Let's go. Let's raid the land. Let's throw away our system of laws. We should never forget that behind all of this prettiness is anarchy. It's violent anarchy.
Well,
that's what she's preaching.
I would argue there that what she said also is that ultra-nationalism, which is always racist, the ultra-nationalists, the purists, the fascists saying, because she didn't just say, what she said was, there should be no constitutional rights. For who? People who hate America. Who decides who hates America?
Sarah Palin decides
who hates America.
Exactly. So,
and this is one point where I think you're wrong, Garland. It's not about anarchy. It is about totalitarianism.
Well, I'm with you on that.
It is about total control of society. Even though they supposedly hate big government, they will be the first to make it Fortress America. They will mm-hmm. be first to punish the immigrants. That's the first to punish everybody they get, the gays, etc.
See, I think anarchy leads to totalitarianism, so I don't think those two are against each other at all. I think you have to destroy the current system before you can impose a more nasty one. Let's go to Nick, who's on the telephone.
And I think we're all on the same track.
I think we are. Nick, go ahead, talk to us.
Yeah, that's right, and I'm sitting in a choir. But I wanted to find out what you guys thought about, first off, the Supreme Court thing, that is just... It's unbelievable that they would just go ahead and do something like that, and on the party lines, and it's like that was their plan all along. Pretty much everything that they, you know, they stole the election, they put in their Supreme Court people to do what they want, and now that they've got it, and now they're on to like the next part of the game, which is let's get these, you know, these appealing people, if you will, to go ahead and you know, out our line.
I could, Nick, I could tell, and this is not a criticism, we're welcome to have you, but I can tell you're somewhat new to the Raucous Caucus. If you've been listening to us over the last few weeks, you've seen virtually every show we have talked about the horror of that Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, how it makes corporations have more power than individual Americans. All I can say is we're glad to have you on board, and I assure you, none of the three of us in any way have left that decision alone. We all think it was lawless and dangerous.
And let me add this, Nick, and that is the other thing that I keep saying is this. And though, you know, initially we're upset about it, we talk about it, we have no idea just how drastically it will affect our democracy. And for all we know,
we won't know
in 2010 and 2012,
right,
not just everyone talks about national elections. If you've got a company and you want to put slots or racetracks or whatever it is in a particular county, you simply put flood so much money that you put in your county councilman, you put in your county executive or mayor or alderman or whatever, you can be even more effective with a corporation on the local level than you can
look
on the national.
What happened
in I think Nick had a second point.
Happened in West Virginia. Here you had in West Virginia, you had a corporation install a West Virginia Supreme Court justice, pay $4 million to put him on the bench so that he could overturn the coal laws and allow them to rape the community of West Virginia. This is precisely what happened there, and now it's opened up to happen all across the country.
You still there, Nick?
You got a second point, Nick? Okay, we're moving on to the next caller. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, am I on the air?
You are on the air.
You are.
Talk to
all
us.
Right.
About 20 minutes ago, someone called and talked about Smedley Butler.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a former Marine. I know something about Smedley Butler. He won two medals of honor. He was a great Marine. And that caller is exactly right, that the right-wingers tried to bring him into a cabal to, overthrow Franklin Roosevelt, and Smedley Butler turned the guys in.
Mm-hmm.
Smedley Butler also worked in Nicaragua for a long time in the 20s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And when he retired, he said, "I've been nothing more than muscle for American corporations."
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the problem.
Well,
and that, frankly, who's the Tea Party is fronting right now. They are fronting.
No, we're talking
American
about what Smedley Butler was, one of the few Marines ever to win two Medal of Honors.
I hear you.
And you guys can be down low for an hour, but at least talk about history.
No, we're not, and actually, no, we're not besmirching the name.
We did say
he turned these people in. So we're not saying he's a bad guy. He did the right thing. In fact, he may have listened to them and set it all up just so he could kind of collect them all together and turn them in at one time.
I'll tell you, we're running out of time here, and Terry, uncharacteristically, hasn't.
Why can't the federal government hire the unemployed to remove this snow, just like Franklin Roosevelt?
Well, we already said we support that idea. We support that idea, and I encourage you strongly to talk. Well, that's. I'll tell you this. I personally, I'm very proud to say I worked for the Democrats in Congress on House Judiciary Committee and the House Homeland Security Committee, and I've never been called a Republican in my life.
I got to tell the truth. I'm really a plant for the Tea Party movement in here. I'm just here to get info on you guys and turn them back into Sarah and my masters.
Garland's brother out there ready to take over after we're done?
But I'm sure he's in here.
Well, we'll keep talking until he gets here. Terry, you haven't spoken in a while. What are your thoughts on all this?
I think the Democrats particularly, but Americans in general, really take this very seriously. This is a very dangerous movement. And, I don't know exactly how the Democrats are going to come together on this, or if they can, given that they're, no disrespect to the dead, but Senator Murtha just, passed away, and talk about somebody who has used corporate money and the corporation system to feed himself.
I was never a big fan of Frank Murtha. He was a hero on the left because he turned against the war. I'm glad he turned against the war. But for me, he was part of the same corrupt system. I mean, frankly, he was one of the worst. I was never a big fan of his.
With this Supreme Court change, we are at a turning point, and this is not a time for activists to be pushing their own agenda. It's much bigger than that, and they better understand that this is a big, big threat.
And that Supreme Court decision could alter the playing field so much to the right that people who normally would have no chance at winning suddenly become viable candidates. That's what really scares me, because I cannot imagine Sarah Palin with the nuclear codes.
I'll tell you, normally at this
write
time...
write them on her hand, of course, you know.
Normally at this time we'd be followed by Brother Ah and his wonderful jazz music, but I think due to the blizzard he has not arrived, and so we've given the go-ahead to keep talking to you, at least until Brother Ah does arrive, and frankly, this is such an important topic that I want to encourage everyone to call in at 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. What do you think about Sarah Palin and the Tea Party movement? Do you think they're a joke? Do you think they're a dangerous joke? Who do they represent? Do you know anyone who is in that movement, who has that thought? I really want to hear from our callers here. Of course, this is Mark Levine, where I'm sitting here with
Garland Nixon.
And on the phone somewhere underneath, where are you? Underneath the 14th Street Bridge? Where are you, Terry?
No, I'm on the 14th Street Bridge, blocking traffic perfectly, deliberately, because, there's just too much traffic, too much snow. I'm sleeping under the car.
Mm-hmm. You're not really traffic on the bridge. I sure hope not. Hey, do we have to take another break before we get to the next hour, T? Yeah, we do. We do. So I got some callers on the line. Hang on with us, callers.
We're going to keep going.
We're going to keep going, but we do have to take a break at the top of the hour. I do want to hear your thoughts on this movement, because we have time to take that caller? Oh, we do. I'm sorry. T tells us we do have time. Bob, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
How you doing?
We're good. What are your thoughts?
Oh, except for Terry's a little cold. I think he can't feel his toes.
I just want to make a couple quick comments, because I'm enjoying your show, and I'd rather listen to you. I think you all are exactly on target when you say that they are fronts for a much larger movement. The second thing I'd like to say about your last caller, he said Smedley Butler worked where? Because the pronunciation of that country is Nicaragua, not Nicaragua. I didn't appreciate his pronunciation.
I wasn't listening that closely.
And thirdly and lastly,
yeah.
Smedley Butler, the most important thing he ever did, He wrote a book called War is a Racket.
Mm-hmm.
And as a major general, he documents corporate corruption vis-a-vis the corporations to the military during World War One. So check out his book, and I think it speaks for itself. And I want to thank you for your show. It's a fantastic show.
Thank you so much. Thank I had
you.
No idea we had so many Smedley Butler fans.
And, you know, I think this
audience.
Actually, people won't remember Sarah Palin. They'll remember this show as the Smedley Butler. Did you hear
hour.
The Smedley Butler show?
Absolutely.
We got to remember to make sure that Bob knows about being at Ben's next door so he can come down and meet us and see the show in person and ask questions in person at Ben's next door every Tuesday except during heavy blizzards.
That's right. Next Tuesday, if you like the show, or even if you don't like the show, what the heck. But next Tuesday, why don't you meet us at Ben's Next Door? It's right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. We'll be there at 7. We have a mic. The audience can stand right there and ask us some questions and laugh, and you can be raucous with the caucus.
Absolutely. And we're going to continue into the next hour. Rashidi, I know you're on the line. Hang on with us. We're going to take a quick station ID break. The phone number is 202-588-0893, and we'll be right
and
back.
And you listen to the Smedley Butler out.
The Rockus Caucus. We'll be right back after this.
WPFW. Washington.
The Smedley Butler stuff's getting out of here.
And we're back. See, that's not very quick.
Oh, they,
you got to do the ID on the hour. That's part of what we do in radio. But we're going on because the poor Brother Oz is lost in snow somewhere. Brother Oz, if you're listening to us, we love you. We miss you. And if you make it here, we'll gladly put you on your unwanted hour. But we're here. We're stuck. We can't go anywhere. The snow's outside.
And, you know, we've got a bunch of people who normally, we've probably got people who are walking over, turning on their radio saying, well, it's 8 o'clock and I want to relax and listen to Brother Oz some smooth. They got these three nutcases.
Well, we can be smooth. There's lively jazz, right? I mean, it's not all smooth.
Hey, you know,
some
I just realized
very
something.
Lively.
Terry's finally taken to the streets. Literally.
Terry's in the streets.
He's in the streets.
Terry's alone.
Let me tell you something, Mark.
Terry, I think you should march on the Capitol by yourself.
When Terry says he's going to take to the streets, buddy.
I've got a shovel. I've got a hat. I've got a coat. I'm getting $10 an hour.
That's right. You know, the guy, I'll tell you, Nick called. I think it was Nick who called and thinks that you should be getting $10 an hour.
Yeah.
I got to say, by the way, and I didn't mean in any way to disrespect Nick. I agree with his proposal. It's off topic tonight, but I absolutely agree. It's a great proposal to take unemployed people and have them shovel snow.
Put them to work and
absolutely,
things of that nature.
Absolutely.
The CCC, WPA kind of stuff.
Let's move on to Rashidi and see what Rashidi thinks about Sarah Palin and the Tea Party movement. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I have absolutely nothing to say about the Tea Party or Sarah Palin.
Is this a Smedley Butler quote again?
And I think that the WPSW has really stepped off and stepped so low to bring on a program that mimics the McLaughlin report of years past and still current. I mean, take up our airtime for an hour. I haven't learned one thing that about the Tea Party or Miss Palin since this show has been on this evening that I didn't know before. And that's a waste of time of our hard money that people don't donate to this station, and you just begged last week for some more money. We have serious things going on. They just assassinated an imam out around Detroit, and this president okayed the Bush law to go ahead and assassinate, okay, American citizens. And we're talking about Sarah Palin.
Well,
and you're talking about the fact that the courts just gave the country almost 100% to the corporations. You running around here talking this kind of crap. They will make the decisions, okay, now as who lives and who dies.
Look,
okay, and we're talking about that kind of crap. Come on, give me a break, PFW. You for years and years you stood on a high ground. You're stooping too low now.
Rashidi,
with the McLaughlin report.
Rashidi, can we take this to mean that you're not going to be at Ben's next door to meet us next Tuesday at 7 p.m.?
You know, I don't know what he says he doesn't learn anything. I went through and I suffered through 58 minutes of Sarah Palin. Let me tell you, that was not easy. I had to, you know, like I said, the toilet was nearby. But I think it's important for us to recognize this is a danger. She's not just a joke. I wish she were just a joke. I wish it was
also,
something.
You know, I want to disagree with Rashid there.
Go
sorry,
ahead.
Rashid. One, I'm sure you know if you listen to WPFW, this is Terry Kester speaking. You know, I work on other shows as well, What's at Stake. And we do, you know, we do an awful lot of, in fact, almost continuous serious interviews, serious exploration, et cetera. One of the most powerful weapons against any totalitarian state is laughter. and is enjoyment. And you may think we're like the McLaughlin Report. I've actually worked with them. I've hired them. I've used them. I'm not a big fan of theirs. But the point is, we do talk about every issue that you're concerned with. We also have a heck of a lot of fun doing it. Because, frankly, if we don't add that element to it, we lose.
I agree. And you know, first of all, let me say, Rashidi, I certainly appreciate that you contributed last week to WPFW, and I asked to do the same. And, in fact, that contribution gives you a vote, so you can actually use that vote to say, get those guys off the air. So it's great that you can be a part of WPFW.
We are unusual. There's no doubt about it. We are unusual. The Raucous Caucus is not like most WPFW fare. Most of the people who've called in have been very supportive and like the fact that we can joke about serious topics. Because I'll tell you, when you're talking about some of the really awful things Republicans are doing, you can get one of what most people just sort of get angry and depressed.
And
if you want to be angry and depressed, you have every right to be angry and depressed, because let's face it, they put our country in a tailspin. Whether it's two wars, whether it's the economic depression. What we try to do here, and we've talked at length about the Citizens United case, we try to tell the truth, to give the facts, let people know what's going on. But yeah, we do it a little lighthearted because, let's face it, sometimes mockery and laughter is the best salve against all of this. You know, if we only respond with anger, I don't think we're going to achieve anything.
It's also a great weapon.
I think so, too.
It truly is.
I think so, too.
And, you know, one thing that's important, and I think, you know, for those people who are just listening to the Raucous Caucus maybe for the first time, and you hear us all laughing, when we walk out of this studio, we all laugh and smile because we have fun. You know, if you talk about a serious subject, at least you can have a little bit of fun with it, and you can smile instead of sticking your head down and crying, which is certainly an option under these circumstances.
It's justified.
But when we walk around, the other thing, this, it's not like we're making up something or this is some kind of a show we're putting on. We have fun doing this. We enjoy doing this, and we hope our listeners have fun. 202-588-0893. We hope our listeners have fun joining with us.
There's a guy named Al Smith. Many people WPFW know who he is. He was the Democratic candidate for president right before Franklin Roosevelt.
Wait, now you're showing your age.
I wasn't around. I know this from my history books, Terry. But
yes,
Al Smith ran against 1920 against Herbert Hoover. They called him the Happy Warrior. He very much believed in progressive causes. He very much, you know, believed in fighting for liberal causes. But they called him the Happy Warrior because a lot of times people respond more. And I got to say, one of the reasons I think they're responding to Sarah Palin is because, yes, she uses humor and she uses sound bites and she's not a bad-looking woman. I'm sorry. I wish that didn't matter in our politics, but it does. And sometimes the best way to get people to listen to you is to do so, with a little bit of laughter, a little bit of lightheartedness. Let me go on to Rick. Rick, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Thank you very much. You guys have a good time. That's great. But times are tough. The Tea Party movement is a reflection of that. I believe that it's time for a constitutional convention. That's how bad things are on the Supreme Court and elsewhere.
To do what, Rick?
Excuse me?
To do what? What would you do at your constitutional convention?
Well, I have a website that goes into that detail, but it's extensive.
Okay.
It's,
what's the heart of it?
It's presidentbyamendment.com.
And what's the heart of your proposal? Get rid of the Senate, maybe, and the filibuster?
Electoral college?
I don't get rid of them. I put some ombudsmen on the Senate. I get rid of a lot of the current personnel in Congress that voted for the invasion of Iraq. I remove the 5 Supreme Court justices that voted for Heller v. D.C., and the same 5 fascists also voted for Citizens United v. FEC.
But it sounds, Rick, like you're more out to get rid of individuals in government than are to change the system.
No, that's Section 12 of my amendment called Temporary Measures. The amendment is an extensive revision of the entire Constitution.
And you make it more democratic, perhaps?
I like to think so.
Okay. All right. You're
a man after my own heart. I've done extensive shows on that. There's a wonderful, I wish I could remember their name, there's a fantastic professor.
Well, then answer my emails, man.
University of Texas is calling for a constitutional convention. There's also a professor at Harvard. There's also a professor at University of Virginia. The idea of having a constitutional convention is gaining momentum because it's obvious that our government is not functioning.
And what, that's why the Tea Party's out there, and that's why it's so scary, because
right.
it's Joe Sixpack out there. What's that means something's really, really wrong.
What's your website again? We got a lot of listeners who would probably
presidentbyamendment.com.
Presidentbyamendment.com. All right, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Donnell. Donnell, welcome to the Ruckus Caucus.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, we're good.
You guys are right on point about Sarah Palin. I don't agree with almost anything she says, except for the her abortion stance. But a lot of guys, I work with a lot of older conservative white guys, and the stuff that they say about her is terrible. They said bad things about Clinton, Mrs. Clinton also.
Donnell, what do you do for a living? I'm curious, if you don't mind. You don't have to say the company, but you say you work with a bunch of conservative white guys.
I'm a plumber.
You're a plumber. Okay.
Yeah.
And what do they say about Sarah Palin?
The stuff that they say about women, you know, in powerful positions is terrible. You know, and they're talking about white women. And I'm like, man. So, you know, around me, they used to didn't say bad things about Barack Obama. They do now, though. But, you know, just the whole mindset of these guys is so warped and crazy. So you know that they're out to get Obama. You know, all this stuff about them being obstructionists and everything,
right.
The Republicans, that's true. They may be doing it for political purposes, but I believe a lot of it is just pure hate also.
I agree with you, I believe a lot of it that we talk a lot about policy and a lot about politics, and I believe a lot of it is about race. I believe one of the issues with the Republic, because as I've said a million times on this show, what we have now in Congress is a very far right wing Congress. All the moderates got wiped out in 2006 and 2008, so all we have left is the true believers, a condensed version, a concentrated conservative bunch. And I believe a lot that they do is this: there is a black person, a person of color in office, and a lot of our base doesn't like people of color, so we cannot do anything under any circumstances to support this person. We have to send the message we're against him, and we have to send the message that we do not accept the premise that an African-American can be in charge of this country. He must have been born in Kenya.
But you know what? Donnell raises an interesting point that we really haven't discussed yet about Sarah Palin. And the question is, what impact does the fact that she's a woman make? You know, he talked about all the sexist comments that the plumbers make. One of the fascinating things, if you study the people that came to Sarah Palin rallies, and she was actually drawing more than John McCain in the last days of their election, is that they were about two-thirds men, one-third women. McCain said he put her on the ticket to appeal to women. She actually appealed to men. And what there was, and I want to know if people agree with me on this, but in my view, there was an attraction factor. There was, here is a relatively young, most politicians are not good-looking.
Yeah, right.
Scott Brown, hey, there's a guy that they elected maybe because he was good-looking. So it's not just a female thing, but that a lot of the attraction to her was they just wanted to see this pretty woman up there, and they weren't really listening to what she had to say. I don't know whether, Terry, you agree with me on that?
Look, if you can use a pretty woman to sell beer, cars, Viagra, et cetera, you can use a pretty woman to sell political takeover. And, you know, I have no doubt that's why McCain put her on the campaign. I'm sure he was aware of that. It was a very nice little, you know, little give me to say that, oh, yes, did it to get the women's vote, but I don't think that's true at all. He did it to support the men's vote. And I think the men, I'm not surprised at all that two-thirds of the people in attendance in the Tea Party were men. She appeals to most men. There's no question about that. And she also plays to that in her cuteness, in her winking, you know, in her gestures and everything else. She really honestly does.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've referred to Sarah Palin as the trophy wife of the Republican Party. You know, at the time McCain went out to choose something, he had some, though I wouldn't agree with a Kay Bailey Hutchinson, but he had some very legitimate, very well-respected women, female conservatives, who certainly were capable of handling the job.
Yeah, but Kay Bailey Hutchinson said it's not as young or cute as
right.
Sarah
so,
Palin.
But basically, he did what an old rich Republican would do. You go
a
out,
trophy
you
wife.
Jettison the old one, and you get yourself a nice, pretty young
That's
trophy
what
wife.
Gingrich
now,
did.
Don't get me wrong. She's not going to be too bright, but she's going to look good.
That's,
she was
good
the trophy wife.
Well,
perfect
we
metaphor.
We have our first woman caller on the line, so
uh-oh.
I want to see what she thinks about
trouble.
All of this. Louise, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Yes, hello, folks.
Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, good. I didn't realize I was the first woman. That's an honor. Rashidi, you want to get a transcript of Amy Goodman's interview this morning with Dennis Kucinich. He backs you up exactly.
On
get
which
a transcript
point?
Of that. Number two, when the Marine called in, he was on your side, folks. He's on our side, and you made fun of him. You couldn't jump in quick enough to make fun of him. Do you think you made a friend of him? And number three, please, instead of using these stereotypes about Sarah Palin, quote her, discuss things she said, give us some meat from what she said, and then discuss that, not just stereotypes that don't really tell you what she's saying.
Well, Louise, I don't know if you were listening since 7 o'clock we began
yes,
this.
Yes, I was.
Well,
I was indeed.
I went through some details of things she said. I went through, I talked about the fact that she said that she wanted to end cap and trade, that she wanted no
yep.
strings for states, that she wanted, but then she condemned the stimulus package, the way it was spent, that she wanted no federal dollars. The problem is that there really weren't that many ideas she had. Fiscal conservatism. I mentioned the very few ones.
That's the trouble.
But
she
I don't think she's a
good.
Woman of ideas.
She sounds good, and there's nothing, not that much behind it.
Exactly.
And you've got to attack it from that point of view, not bring in vague generalities of, oh, she's a country hick, and she's got the know-nothings behind her and the white people and all that.
Well, I think that partly it's because she has no ideas that we go into the other stuff. Because if you look at her ideas, they are internally inconsistent. I mean, again, the classic example was the one where she said that she wants the states to have more power to decide things, and then so no federal strings. And then in the very same speech, two paragraphs later, she says, and look at how some states spent the stimulus package, and then she attacked one of them. I mean, this is a woman who has no incoherent ideas other than to repeat warmed-over Bush-Cheney ideas.
And I would say this. Yes, I use generalities, but they're not very vague. When I say I don't think she's very bright, I'm not saying that as a stereotype. I'm saying that as an individual, basically what she's demonstrated as a result of her intellect. When I say, well, I think there's a race issue is there, what I'm saying is this. I look at the TV and I don't see no people of color there.
Oh, yeah.
So realistically, I'm not just using stereotypes and vague generalities. I'm going specifically by what I see there.
Yeah, and that was good, yeah.
Yeah, so, and you know...
That was specific.
Right.
That was specific, and I wish you'd bring in more specifics even than what you've just quoted.
Fair enough. I'll tell you, I like specifics, and so, Louise, I appreciate your
and
point.
And, Louise...
I like details.
We hope to see you next week for a half smoke. At a vegetarian chili at Ben's next door. We will be there from 7 to 8. We'd love you to come down. We'd love to meet you, and we'd love you to be a part of the Raucous Caucus Live.
And
do you
I don't,
have any handsome single older men?
I don't know. Maybe that Marine that you were talking about. We'll come by.
Yeah,
by the way, I don't think
wait,
we were attacking the Marine.
Wait,
I just thought we were just talking about Smedley Butler.
Wait
go
a minute,
ahead, Terry.
Handsome single. Well, Terry,
oh, Terry you're not single, Terry. You're yeah. married. Now
yeah,
calm
I
down.
I know that. And happily, very happily, but I am older.
Oh, T is pointing to himself. Our guy behind the glass, our wonderful production engineer, is pointing out that he's an older single guy. And let me tell you, T's
he
in good
not.
Shape. He says he is. Aren't you single? Are you not single?
Well, not to mention this. Now that she's proclaimed on a show listened by untold millions.
And they can all meet her at Ben's next door
I'm telling you right
next week, Tuesday
so
at
what's
7 p.m.
So look, guys, you have a beautiful woman with a great foreign accent. She's going to be at Ben's come next door.
And a woman who cares very seriously about policy, which is, of course, why men date women in the first place.
I think it's very interesting that we're getting a couple of calls that are quite critical, which indicates to me to some degree that we are stimulating some thought, even if it's criticism.
And it's okay. And, I don't mind criticism. I can take it.
No, either do I. And, you know, I hope they continue to listen because, you know, I think we can deal with specifics about what Sarah Palin says, but I actually agree with Garland, and I think Garland is the most brilliant political analysis I've heard you give about the trophy wife of the Republican Party. You know, it is the appeal and the power of Sarah Palin and the Tea Party movement is
generalization.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to realize
and
that.
And somebody,
right. Good out, point. Great
we have
point.
To figure out a way to oppose that, to fight that, and it can't be just with debating policy, because policy is not what this is about.
Part of it, sad to say, is fighting soundbite with soundbite. And I don't like soundbites. I hate soundbites. I like detail. I want a professor of law there, not some renegade warrior going out there and not caring about the law.
His gut, right?
But I recognize there are Americans that do care about the soundbite and do care about the gut. And I recognize that, unfortunately, it's necessary. I say unfortunately, but I do recognize it's necessary.
And so that leads to the real question. You know, how do you oppose a Sarah Palin? Now, forgive me for saying this because this is extreme, but how do you oppose a Hitler who is appealing to great fear, who is appealing to great emotionalism? How do you oppose that?
I think
you can't
oppose
that with just argument.
No, no, no.
Well,
that's a great question, Terry, and I want to pose it to our listeners. In my view, we need soundbite for soundbite. We need to say she's a front for the oil industry.
But, you know,
we need to say that she is someone who would, who would cause more unemployment. I mean,
well,
she's someone.
You know,
I mean, all these things that maybe something a little catchier than that.
Yeah, but an interesting case analysis, and that is when we look at how Barack Obama got elected. That's kind of what he went against. He went against the generalities, and he went against all the sound bites, et cetera. And all he did was he stayed on point. He continued to stay on policy, but he didn't get. He didn't open the hood and get all the nuts and bolts and wires of policy. He was fairly general, but he stayed on point and he stayed on policy. And I would argue the way to deal with that to some extent, and I agree with Terry, you have to have people with charisma, but I think to some extent you have to stay on policy. You just can't get into that nuanced crap that leaves people.
Well, you know, I'm okay with the nuanced stuff. I actually think President Obama is very good with the nuanced stuff, but you also need the sound bites. And one of the things that really has gotten me, like, for example, when she talks about the death panels, which, of course, is ridiculous. It's been thoroughly debunked. It's absolutely not true. You know, Obama wants to kill my grandma. It's absolutely false, but it is the kind of disgusting lie that people tend to believe, the big lie. I mean, talk about Joseph Goebbels. You need to respond and say, why is your health care premium going up? Ask Sarah Palin. Why is it going up 40%? Ask Sarah Palin. Why is your mom not getting the cancer treatment she needs? Ask Sarah Palin. You have to make it personal and that way respond to really in kind. And let's face it, Sarah Palin's policies do lead to higher health insurance premiums. So it's okay to take it to her that way.
I agree.
But we have another woman on the line, apparently. All right, let's go to her. Welcome to the...
I'm the second woman on the line.
Terrific.
Tonight.
What's your name? I didn't get your name.
My name is Joan.
Hi, Joan. Talk
hi,
to us.
Joan.
I wanted to say hi in regard to your mention of one of my favorite politicians, and I also wanted to
who's
get
that?
Back to you
Smedley
on the issue of Sarah Palin.
Tell us who your favorite politician is.
you don't want to
is it Sarah? Is it Sarah Palin? Who is it?
No, talk. No. You mentioned Al earlier.
Al Gore.
No.
Al Smith.
Al Smith.
I don't know how old you are, but to remember Al
I'm
Smith.
No, she sounds
very
young.
I'm almost as old as Al Smith.
Oh, really? Okay, well, you remember him.
I was in grammar school with Al Smith's grandson.
And how often do you hear Al Smith talked about on the radio?
Well,
only on WPFW.
Like zero times. This is the first time, so I love it.
Terrific, Joan.
Also, Al was, I'm from New York, originally, although I live in the district now, and love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But Al Smith was a great friend and supporter and associate and whatever, probably political comrade of my grandmother's uncle, who was a Catholic priest and a graduate of Notre Dame University, had his master's from Notre Dame, and who was a pastor in Lower Manhattan. And the he was the... chaplain at the Tombs, which is the big prison in New York City. And when he died in 1916, Al Smith, who was governor at the time of the state of New York, had a great motorcade from St. Patrick's Cathedral, where the funeral ceremony was held, down to the burial site in Lower Manhattan. But in any case...
Well, Joan, you can confirm what I said. Is it not true they called Al Smith the happy warrior? Because he would fight hard for progressive causes, but he didn't do it in an angry or sullen way. He did it in a very friendly way. Is that fair?
He did it in a very determined way.
Mm-hmm.
Even when the Ku Klux... You know, he ran for president, and the Ku Klux Klan managed to get 4 million people to to come to a rally in Washington to march against his candidacy because he was a Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was in
the first Catholic to run for president, in fact.
And, of course, and I grew up as a Roman Catholic, thinking that there would never be a Catholic president. And with John Kennedy
mm-hmm.
coming to the presidency, I was a young mother at that time, some years ago, and it was just so touching to me, even though by then I had dropped away from the faith.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But it was very much the Kennedy presidency and the Smith effort at becoming president because of the tremendous prejudice against
sure.
Catholics in the United States was very close to the presidency, I think, and the aspirations of Barack Obama.
And I want to hear about your thoughts on Sarah Palin, but Terry, you wanted to say something first?
Well, just the same thing, because obviously, Joan, you've got an awareness of history and having lived through much of it, but also a general awareness. And I wanted to know where you think this leaves us today with a Sarah Palin and her popularity.
Well, I'm very worried about Palin, but I'm also very worried about Obama. And I did listen to Amy Goodman this morning, and I heard Dennis Kucinich really hitting hard at this thing of the presidential right to assassination of U.S.
Yeah.
citizens. And I think this is a new first low in the presidency. But I think the
it's
problem
not new.
No, I was going to say, it's
not
very
new.
Old.
Getting to the
she means new for Obama.
Palin, the problem with Obama, which may be the problem with Palin, is that they both seem to contain a sense of hopefulness, of change, of something new, something different, which appeals to Americans. And both are very attractive sexually, physically, you know, their persona.
They're charismatic.
Appealing.
Right.
So we're used to having things sold by the public appearance.
Right.
And so we were able to sell Obama, and now we're able to sell Palin. And the big problem is that Obama has turned out to be something very different from what he seemed to promise on the campaign trail. And now, where will Palin go?
I'll tell you, Joan, this kind of question of where Obama, where he's more progressive or more in the centrist is the kind of thing, frankly, that Garland, Terry, and I are constantly arguing about. And so, again,
yep.
I hope you'll join us next week at Ben's Chili Bowl. We can meet you. You can join in the discussion. I think Garland, I don't want to speak for Garland, but my own view is that I will criticize things that certainly there's no right to assassinate United States citizens. Certainly, and I want to explore that exactly what Obama signed. I will criticize Obama all the time, but I would not ever put him in the same boat as Sarah Palin. I do think it's very important. I don't think you are, Joan, and I'm not accusing you of it. But I don't think our disappointment with Obama should in any way be compared with the real danger that is Sarah Palin. But go ahead, Terry.
But there's a very important point that Joan has made out, and there actually was an excellent article, I think it was by Richard Cohen, talking about our penchant in the current society, in the current culture, for electing presidents and politicians. And, of course, what's his name, Brown or Scott?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, falls into this, too.
Nude guy with a truck.
Yeah, based on celebrityism.
Of course.
Now, whether or not Obama had good policies or bad policies, whether or not he meant them or did not mean them, or whether he follows through or not, a large part of the vote is simply because he was appealing.
People,
and we have been reduced to that in our general elections. In fact, this is actually one of the dangers of, frankly, democracy.
Sure.
Is it can be led very easily by simply charismatic people.
Right.
And I don't know how
that's part of the nature of the beast,
though. Showbiz age.
I think that will always be the case. There's nothing we can do about it. All we can do is find more charismatic progressives to
and
carry the torch.
It hasn't always been true, unfortunately. I mean, it's something that's true right in the 20th century and the 21st century, but it has not been
Well, it's
true.
A television age. Ever since
yeah.
John F. Kennedy beat
yeah.
Richard Nixon because he didn't shave, he had a 5 o'clock shadow, right, in the 1960
yeah.
debate.
And it also goes to the heart of perhaps why our earlier caller was talking about needing a constitutional convention. Because of this showbiz element, which has been my entire career, it is almost impossible to get good governance. The showbiz
It's not always that way, though. I mean, go ahead, Gong.
I would argue this. I would argue that this is not simply an issue in government, and it's not simply an issue today. I would argue if you go over the course of history, when you look at the huge religious leaders, they were very charismatic. Even the ones that went good or evil. If you look at people who ran big movements. People have a tendency to listen to, pay attention to, congregate around, and follow charismatic individuals, regardless of politics or anything else, and that's human nature.
It is. It's just a necessary thing that the evil that we have to deal with.
But it has changed. And if you don't recognize this change,
it's changed because of TV.
You're misunderstanding where our society is. I mean, you know, frankly, if you just want to go back in history, look at the really ugly guys who were in the Senate and the House.
Well, they're still quite an ugly crowd there, Terry. Yeah. Hey, we have to take a break. If you want to call in and join this discussion, it's easy to do. Just pick up the phone, dial 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893.
About the Donner Pass, market's starting to look kind of tasty, so let's just hope, I'm not here too long.
There's a vending machine in the lobby.
Okay, Mark, your life is, you're safe.
Thank God, because the way Gong was looking at me, I just wasn't sure.
Joe.
Talk to us.
First of all, I want to say the Rockus Caucus is the hippest, funkiest, most intelligent and provocative radio show, bar none, in America. So I want to thank you guys for who you are and what you're doing. May you go national one day.
Thank you.
Wow, thank I hope you. That's on tape. Boy, I hope that's on tape.
that's a response to the people that didn't like our show.
Yeah, right.
I have a major announcement.
Okay, go ahead.
I have abandoned my role as a political progressive activist. I'm going to be the new national coordinator of the National Tea Party Alliance.
I don't believe you, Joel.
Okay, you're right. Here we are at the crossroads of our nation, and I think one of you said very astutely, we're either going to go to a progressive direction or we're going to go towards a more right-wing direction. I think Garland said that what's changed about America is the demographics. We have more people of color who are in leadership positions. We got younger. Thank God we have younger people who are emerging. I think one of you said we need to give the torch to new progressive leaders. I think where we have to go now is have a very thoughtful discussion within the progressive movement, inside and outside, about how we, A, check the teabaggers, check the right wing, because quite frankly, not only are they out of control, but often I find that the hardest thing to do with progressives is for them to progress, and often the left gets left out of major political decisions because of some kind of an inability to work together, which is propelled by, I think, foundation grants and people wanting to take credit. I think what we need to do is pull together every single major progressive organization, have a conference in 50 states, create a progressive national umbrella organization with a platform of universal health care, universal access to housing, a safety net like in Europe, quality education, and deal with global warming. I'm afraid.
In other words, you want our own tea party. You just got to come up with a clever name, Joel.
Yeah, a coffee party.
Coffee party? All right.
We need some caffeine, but you see, what I've seen both on working in the grassroots on the outside and working in government for over two decades is if you do not have organized pressure from without, members of Congress and the White House will tack to what they deem the safe direction, which means they'll get reelected and get campaign contributions. And I think there's enough evidence to suggest that fragmented progressive organizing does not work, that we have to think in terms of having true political power on the ground. And people often complain, they say, oh, members of Congress don't care about us and Obama's not progressive enough. Well, my perspective is they would care if the majority of Americans who are, I think, modern and progressive would form a political organization. Imagine where workers would be if they didn't have the AFL-CIO.
In other words, if we pose the same threat to Democrats, that the Tea Party poses to Republicans a threat of a primary campaign, a threat of if you don't have universal health care, you might lose in a primary.
Right.
If we were to form our own Tea Party-ish, again, we got to think of a much more clever name than the Coffee Party. Sorry, Joel. Other than that, it's a great idea. But other than the name, it's a great idea.
I'm telling you, it's the Carrot Juice Wheatgrass Party.
No, that's not going to work.
Wheatgrass Juice Party.
That's not going to work either, Garland. But I think that Joel is dead on, that we need to form our own progressive movement. We'll think of a clever name. We'll get to that in a minute. But the idea that we have to get, you know, it's like Terry always wants us to go to the streets. I'm okay with going to the streets, but what I'd rather go, Terry, is to a convention hall. We can go through the streets to get there, where we can, whether it's a constitutional convention or not, we can form our own progressive party, not to in any way dismantle the Democratic Party, but to encourage the Democratic Party to move towards the progressive.
I'd like to hear what Terry says. I'd like to hear what Terry has to say, but first I'd like to say after that I have a question, an important question for Joel. Go ahead, Terry.
This is great. We've been on the air just about a year, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
About so?
Yeah. It's the Raucous Caucus. You know, and you guys are learning fast, and I'm proud of you. You know, You're really becoming to understand and agree with me and the Terry D. Kester plan, and I love you for it. I really honestly do.
What was Joel say about taking credit for everything instead of working together? I think he said something about that. Didn't he, Garland? I heard that. Go ahead, Terry.
You know, I mean, I have worked with, you know, a number of groups through, you know, the radio station and everything else, and the progressive movement is the most divided, frankly, self-serving movement, individually self-serving, that I've ever witnessed. Everybody is fighting for their slice of the very small pie.
You're absolutely right, as the author of the Terry D. Kester plan. I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, and there needs to be, and maybe, you know, frankly, this is something I might pick up and take to UDC, because the dean of the law school there has been very supportive in the past. And it's something that maybe could start at UDC. The progressives have got to come together, put aside what they individually want, which may all be noble and good. I don't disagree with any of their causes, but they've got to set those aside for the time being and realize how big this threat is, and they must agree upon a platform of progressive ideas that they are united upon and dedicate a lot of energy and whatever funds they have to that agenda so that we, in fact, do counter the Tea Party in the streets and on the air and everywhere else, because at the moment we are so fragmented.
Well, see, rather than put aside, I'd say join together. I mean, in other words, if you're not a big environmentalism, work on the environmental movement. If civil rights is not particularly your cause, work on civil rights. If labor rights is not particularly your cause, work on labor rights, because you want, if your concern is labor rights, you want environmentalists working with you, work on the environment. The point
that's
is
what the,
all...
that's what the platform is
right.
for.
Come all together.
There's only so much time and energy, particularly in progressive movements, because they are relatively underfunded. But their major time and effort has to be to answer this big threat.
Hey, Joe,
it really honestly does.
Are you still there, Joel? Do we still have Joel?
Oh, we lost Joel.
Oh, darn.
Oh, that's
well,
too bad. Garland had a great question.
Well, Joel, if you're out there, call us back, 202-588-0893. I do have a question for you, a very, very important question, and it's something I think you could give us great insight on. So, Joel, if you're still listening, give us a call back. There's another issue that I really want your insight on.
Fair enough. Let's go to Eric. Eric, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hi, how are you? This is actually my first time calling a radio station at all, and actually listening to your program. I found you sitting in here in the snow and traffic with it through the channels. I love your program, what I've heard of it so far.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Glad we got you to call in. See, that's something. All the radio you've ever heard in your life, this is the first time Eric has called on a radio show, and he just wants to be rocking.
And we hope you listen. We're on every Tuesday at 7. But go ahead, Eric.
Well, I will, and I have some pretty strong views, I think, about the Tea Party. I'm a public safety worker in Washington, D.C., and this has been some of my thoughts personally, and I haven't shared them with anybody, and I wanted to know your views on it. But it seems to me like the Tea Party movement and the Fox News and everything has an opportunity to breed domestic terrorism. And I say that because they get everybody so wound up, and... you get a lot of these uneducated, uninformed viewers that feel that they have to take matters into their own hands. And in listening to Sarah Palin and the way she comes across, in her speeches and her actions, she tends to wind some people up. But I don't know what your views on that are.
Well, I think that she does wind people up. I think it's part of the charisma that we talked about. I don't think any of us have denied that Sarah Palin is a charismatic figure. And frankly, the charisma is necessary. Look, I am a huge supporter of Al Gore. I liked Al Gore way back when, before he became the hero of the environmental movement. And I'm glad he won the election of 2000. I'm just sorry the Supreme Court didn't let him sit as president. But you can't deny that Al Gore is not the most charismatic man in the world. One of the things that Bill Clinton always had over him was Bill Clinton had charisma. Al Gore, intelligent, would have been a great president, didn't have that. So, you know, I'm not willing to...
But his point is, and I think it's a point that I almost hesitate to, you know, even reply to because it's frightening. I think he's right that this group and the Tea Party movement, you know, these are militia people.
Mm-hmm.
These are people that show up with rallies with guns.
Sure.
You know, these are people who are... believe very much in their, quote, individualism and their individual rights as opposed to the communal rights and taking, you know, taking things into your own hands. This very much defines these people. And I think there's a tremendous danger that Sarah Palin is nourishing these kind of people, and it could result in violence that I don't even want to think about.
That's what I was saying earlier in the show. The biggest thing that scares me about them is they cultivate those kind of
that's
people.
Right.
You still there, Eric?
I think we lost Eric.
Okay,
Let's go on to Doug. Doug, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hi, guys. Today I was listening to the Diane Rehm show, and then I followed up in an article in the Washington Post by a fellow by the name of Rick Perlstein. The title of his article in the Washington Post, I don't remember the exact title, but I think it's called, Is American Extremism a Pre-Existing Condition? And he takes you down the history path of movements like the Tea Party, going all the way back to the Roosevelt administration, Kennedy administration, people calling Kennedy and Roosevelt and Truman, you know, communists, and having all these great big crazy gatherings to support their radical right-wing movements. What scares me about Sarah Palin is that never has a party or never has a Tea Party-like movement ever existed in this country when the country has been as corporate-friendly as it has been in recent times, in light of the Supreme Court decision about the donation of dollars to essentially buy off our elections, this is what scares me about her right now.
I tell you, Doug, you say never before. I'll say never in 80 years. But if you look back to 1930, and you will see that at that time there was tremendous corporate power in the 1920s. They had tremendous
corporate power, sure, but not the kind of decision that a Supreme Court would make, like, to, I mean, this it's never been this bad before.
Well, they never had a law like this before, but, you know, prior to, 100 years ago, you had a few wealthy industrialists control everything, the money supply, if you've ever read Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. And we actually had, one of the reasons I try to constrain Terry a little bit is because if you look at United States history, it actually was worse. If you look at the 1890s, 1900s, you look at the power of corporations at that time, it actually was worse than today. Now, that doesn't mean we can't go back there, and that doesn't mean the Supreme Court decision isn't leading us back there. I think it is, but what gives me some hope, some optimism, is that we did escape the dangers of 1890 to 1930, and I think we can do it again.
Yeah, just go Google Tammany Hall in New York. Look up Tammany Hall. Look up some of the things that were going on in Chicago and Kansas City, and it was way worse than it is now. But do we have Joel back?
You say that, Garland, and you say that, but the point is, what stopped it? It wasn't.
I say it was the threat of revolution, like that you like so much, Terry. It was people marching in the streets. It was people marching for socialism. People, muckrakers like Upton Sinclair and Ida Tarbell. People like Franklin Roosevelt promising a New Deal. It was the progressive movement, because if we didn't have the progressive movement, we may very well have led to fascism in America. You had people like Father Coughlin on the radio
using
nativists,
okay, so
all of that.
You're proving my point. You know, we've got to take this to another level. You can, you know, whether it's I'm not advocating violent revolution, which I've made perfectly clear, but we've got
that's
to take
good
it
because
to
the Secret Service would want you in there.
Counteract where we are, because if we don't, it won't be like the 30s. We won't stop it.
Thank you for your call, Doug. We've got Joel back at the specific request of Garland, who has a question for him.
Now, Joel, we are fortunate, and we are very fortunate to have a progressive mind of your extensive knowledge on our here. And here's my question, because I think you could give us a very, very detailed insight here.
Okay.
How do you see the Supreme Court affecting our election process, the Supreme Court decision?
Citizens United.
Well, I think it's devastating because
you're looking at corporate America literally being able to run the country through funding candidates, especially being able to fund their commercials on TV during the political season. That's what a lot of members of Congress raise money for, is to get on television. And I remember in law school at UNC Chapel Hill, they used to always talk about how objective the court was, and it wasn't subjective, and we find now that that's just simply not the case. I mean, Roe versus Wade and Brown versus Board were definitely political decisions, but this is, would be another example of why we need a united progressive movement. And for many years, I had the great pleasure to work for the Chinese Democracy Movement as their director after Tiananmen Square, and I got to meet with leaders of the Czechoslovakian movement, and they used to tell me how lucky we were to be in a democracy where we could organize without the fear of being shot or thrown in jail. And I think we're not taking advantage of the democracy that we literally died and bled for, and you know, World War II. And, you know, there has to be a check and balance. That's what the founding framers created, you know, this thing called the Constitution and judiciary branch and legislative branch and executive branch. The question becomes, how do you get the legislative branch and executive branch to check their power? My suggestion would be that this progressive organization that has to be formed needs to run our own candidates like the Progressive Democrats of America has done. And we have to get people in the Congress. That's all roads do lead to the Congress. So we can not only check the power of the Supreme Court, but also make sure that policies that help regular, ordinary citizens are promulgated and passed. What I'm seeing is that there are, the preponderance of our policies are weighted towards the very wealthy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're weighted towards people who've got a lot of money who contribute to candidates. And that 1% who owns 40% of the wealth, it's not trickling down. That is, to me, the problem is you have a small group of, I'll tell you who I think they are. I think they're insurance company executives. I think
sure.
they're bankers.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with I think there's a problem with insurance companies. I think they have proven not to be able to insure us. I owe $100,000 in medical bills. There's millions who got the same story. But until we begin running our own candidates, we're going to be in this situation forever. And I would close by saying, for those who say, well, we don't have enough money, if the 13 to run progressive candidates or to fund our own organizations, if the 13 million people that President Obama has on his email list gave, you know, $10, $20 a year, we could have a $10 to $20 million organization in Washington, D.C., with chapters in states and cities across the country. And what's interesting is I've been raising this issue and trying to make this happen since I'm 26. I'm only 28 now. That's 2 years ago. I'm just kidding. I always get the same response, and that's why we can't do it. And then we scratch our heads and wonder why we can't get health care legislation passed or affordable housing.
I hear you, Joel.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, one of the things I found really scary, and I did watch the Super Bowl like 100 million odd Americans 2 days ago, and there was a commercial in there that I found really frightening. And it was one where they have children standing up to do something like a pseudo-pledge of allegiance.
Oh, yes.
And it was clearly written by some corporation. I remember I looked up the name of the fake people who put up the ad.
Something
and of course,
against the
and
deficit.
And, of course, it was a major corporation, pharmaceutical companies. And they're doing it ever since the Citizens United case. They're doing it more and more and more. I saw this ad for it was anti-Obama ad, and it was showed. It was like a 60-plus. It was supposedly some organization that would be for seniors, and it turns out it was the pharmaceutical companies had put that ad there. And it's really scary because not only are the corporations taking over our airways and trying to get us to do the things they want, but they're doing it under subterfuge. If they would at least get on the air and say, this is Merck Corporation, we want more taxpayer subsidies for our corporation, give us dollars, I'm the CEO of Merck, I think our democracy could withstand that. But it's this subterfuge that makes it particularly dangerous, and why Joel's idea of fighting with a progressive movement is the right thing.
Well, Joel is right. We need to be national.
It doesn't cost that much. It doesn't cost hardly anything to get a permit on the mall. It really doesn't. It doesn't cost
as much as you would think to get a sound system on the mall.
Yeah, but the mall is not enough, Terry. I have marched on the mall many times. I have been anti-war marches.
That's not my point.
All right.
We joke about a lot hitting the streets. We have no visibility as progressives. None. We have no visibility. Other than the Raucous Caucus, there ain't visibility, guys.
Well, that's why people have to come to Ben's next door and give us visibility. Hey, I am more than willing, the three of us, to start or to help promote Joel's progressive movement. We can do it at Ben's next door. We'll have visibility. Let's swamp the place. Let's show how many people come out in support of a progressive cause. We're going to be there every Tuesday at 7 p.m. It's what started as a radio show became a movement. Let's do it. Let's bring people out.
Raucous movement.
Now you guys are learning. I'm proud of you.
All right, I want to hear what Elisa thinks about all of this. Elisa, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Yeah, hi guys. Thanks for allowing me to give my opinion.
Please do.
Regarding Sarah Palin, Americans have seen what quote unquote electing one dummy has done to this nation for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
And if they're willing to vote another one in to the White House, then shame on them. No matter who gets into the White House, though, nothing is going to change until this nation holds George W. Bush accountable for what he's done to this nation. I mean, we had a surplus. Now people are struggling. He bankrupted the country. The last thing he did was give all of his friends on Wall Street our treasury, and
right.
No one's holding him accountable for nothing. So what I say we need is to have a zero tolerance on politicians who do not represent the people. It's a shame that half of the members of Congress are multimillionaires with the best health care in this nation while the people they represent are struggling because of them, and I'm sick of it.
I hear you, Lisa.
That's all I have to say.
Well, no. I hear you, and I respect your passion, and I got to tell you, you're absolutely right. I'd like to see that anger channeled. You know, the Tea Party is channeling their kind of anger into some very negative things.
I call my congresspeople. I call the White House.
Good for you.
I talk to people. What else am I supposed to do? I feel if I could, I would go down to Texas and make a citizen's arrest of that man who destroyed this nation and caused so many people on this planet to suffer. He's living a life of luxury while people are struggling every day to make it.
Thank you, and she makes a good point. And what's interesting about that is we're talking about people who are angry. Progressives are angry. A lot of people are angry, and people need something to do. There's a lot of people. We have a caller that was Elisa, basically saying, "I'm ready to do something. I just need something
and
to do. I'm willing and ready to act." And I think Joel's saying, if we can unite, you know, Elisa may not be say. I'm going to put all my energy in environmentalism, or I'm going to put all my energy.
Her energy is into punishing George Bush,
right? So, but whatever the case, if you bring together, as Joel was saying, all these progressive organizations under one platform and say what we agree on: universal health care, a social safety net similar to Europe, etc. Just a basic platform that's powerful, has a good strong foundation, and it's something that they all agree on. People like Elisa would say, hey, you know something? I got energy. I want to do something. I'm in. Let's go to work.
And let's not forget that many of us were very active, and that includes all three of us, who Garland, Terry, and me. We're very active in electing President Obama. He needs to listen to our voices. And Elisa's doing exactly the right thing, calling her member of Congress, calling the president. Let me suggest to you, it's not that Elisa hasn't done enough, but maybe the rest of us haven't done enough to do what Elisa did. If the rest of us would call the president and call them and write, you know, President Obama reads 10 letters every night. If we write the president, if we write our member of Congress, if we do everything Elisa is doing, then maybe we will get some change in America. And part of that also is working in 2010 to elect more progressive candidates.
And I want to suggest, I mean, we mentioned this sort of, you know, jokingly, and we're always going to have fun with the Raucous Caucus. There's no question about it. But this could be a true mission for the Raucous Caucus.
Absolutely.
It always bothers me a little bit that on progressive radio, or, you know, that we don't really have missions in terms of action.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about all the political issues, and I'm not criticizing any of our fellow hosts. It's just, you know, the way it is. But if we could go that step further, starting with the Raucous Caucus and the fun that we have, but the seriousness also that we have and the opportunity that we have at Ben's, I mean, we can begin to actually lead and at least inspire and search for leaders to maybe Joel's one of them.
And this is a great way for people to show their support.
One of them.
That's the thing, Terry. You know, we're going to be at Ben's probably every Tuesday, certainly next Tuesday, every Tuesday in the future. If you support this idea, if you support not just the Rockets Caucus, because we're just a cog in the wheel, but support progressive causes, moving this country in a progressive direction, setting up really a counterweight to the Tea Party on the progressive wing, then hopefully you'll show up at Ben's next week or the week thereafter, every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Come talk to us, meet to us. You don't just have to talk on the air. We hang out afterwards. Let's work together. Let's get something
happening. Maybe someone will say, hey, you know, I have skills with web pages. I'll put up a website, things like that. But it's right. Getting together, and I think what's important here is this would be much more powerful than the Tea Party movement, because you would have a lot of many already powerfully established progressive movements coming together on one basic
roof.
I'm thinking platform, but we got a caller.
Bill, welcome to the Rockets Caucus.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Okay, please, all due respect to my brother Rashidi. Keep having fun. Part of the right wing's effectiveness, if you listen to Limbaugh and those guys, Limbaugh's an entertainer. Say
yes,
what
yes.
you will about his ideas. Mm-hmm. We need to, you know, and when you encounter his followers out in the street, they're jovial about their venom.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. The happy warrior.
And we need to keep that spirit alive.
I appreciate that, Bill, because the Washidi kind of hit us hard. But I got to tell you, I think your view, Bill, is the majority view, that people like the show because we do serious issues, but we do so with laughter. And let's face it, if you can't mock Rush Limbaugh, who can you mock? I mean,
also,
come on.
let me just get in a couple more things.
Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. And we also, and Terry, I love your idea. We've got to all, you know, all the groups and interests that could possibly be come under the heading of progressive, we do need to decide, okay, we all have a common interest, which is the continuing of this country as a democratic republic, because let me get scary for a minute.
Okay.
All right.
What is going on the right now, again, if any of the enemy are listening, they will immediately say, oh, he's calling us this and that. Well, if the shoe fits. But this is how the Third Reich, to a degree, started. There were powerful elite interests in Germany who backed Adolf Hitler. And here's one thing. Think about it. The brown shirts. How in the midst of terrible depression in Germany did Hitler's people get uniforms? All these people were out of work.
Yeah.
There was economic problems. Think about that. Now, we have, and let that sink in, people, we have got to, as I said, come together and stop this thing before it really does get out of hand. Because, no, it's not to that point yet, but if we don't stop it, it very well could get there.
It's why we need an active progressive movement on the other side. And we've just been given permission to go one more hour. Terry, I hope your phone line lasts that long wherever you are. Oh, no, I'm wrong. Okay, I'm wrong. I tried to go one more hour, but I'm getting this. Okay, finally, we've got the Brother Rod is here. He's okay, I'm sorry. We do have to wrap it up. Thank you, everybody, for calling in, everyone. We had so many terrific calls. We have so many great ideas. Garland, how can people find you?
You can get in touch with me. Go to Garland Nixon, GarlandNixon, Facebook, or GarlandN@gmail.com, or you can come see me
next
Tuesday
week
at 7 p.m.
Next door.
Ben's Next
Terry,
Door.
Terry, how can people find you?
Terry, TDK, WPFW.org, or Terry, TDK, AOL. But as Garland said, what's really important, come to Ben's Next Door next Tuesday. Let's start.
I'm on Facebook. Absolutely. I'm on Facebook, Mark Levine, MARKLEVINE. My show and all the other stuff I do, you can find at marklevineradio.com, including, yes, I go into the den of Fox News and actually tangle with them. You can check that out, too. But more importantly, we all agree, come to Ben's Next Door or just listen next Tuesday at 7 p.m. for more of the Rockets Caucus.